Hello, friends, and welcome to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better, much happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. During the first hour, I interviewed a fascinating gentleman named Paul Hellyer, coming to us live directly from Toronto, Canada. He was the Canadian Minister of Defense from 1963 to 1967. He's a fascinating gentleman. He's written so many books about finances and also about extraterrestrials, and I hope you enjoyed his interview. We have our second guest now on the line, Barbara Hancloud, who's a wonderful lady from lives on Bowen Island in British Columbia. She's a Pleiadian contactee, and she has many, many beautiful messages for humanity, which we'll be going to her in just a moment. Before that, I wanted to mention a few events coming up. On June 8th, 2016, Michiko Hayashi, the global director of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, will be giving a presentation and water ceremony at the Artesian Springs in downtown Olympia from 6 to 7 p.m. She'll be dedicating a permanent memorial to Dr. Masaru Emoto's April 2010 visit to the Springs. The event's free, and I hope you can all come. And I'd like to back up a little bit. In a week from tomorrow, on May 7th, there's a wonderful Chemtrail conference sponsored by my good friend Matt Landman in Vancouver. If you Google it, you'll find it. I don't have all the conference information right with me now, but I believe it's over by the area of the Great Point Road in the Banyan Book area. But I will post it on my website. If you go to my website after the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com, click on the events. I will post that information about that conference. But it's a chemtrail conference for Saturday, May 7th. I will be going. On June 10th through the 12th, I'll be having my second annual Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, off of exit 111 on Interstate 5. We'll have some wonderful speakers, including Scott Lemriel of the Sayres Agenda, who's had face-to-face contact with benevolent advanced beings from the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. We'll also be having world-famous scientist Gerald Pollack from the University of Washington, who will be giving a keynote speech at the conference on the fourth phase of water. Other people coming to the conference will be Garnet Schulthauser, a famous Canadian psychic who's the author of The Dance of Heavenly Bliss, Carolyn White, a well-known chakra and aura healer, Teresa Carroll, a well-known Seattle psychic, Alfred Lebermott Weber, an international judge and UFO expert who was the head of President Carter's UFO Disclosure Commission in 1977, Randy Kramer, who lived on the planet Mars for 17 years. He's an interesting fellow. Michiko Hayashi, of course, will be there. A gentleman named I nickname him Dr. Yoshi. He's a famous Japanese Hado therapist who will be demonstrating Hado machines during the conference. Now, Hado machines are very interesting because they go into the other dimensions to diagnose and help with almost any spiritual or physical condition. The machines will also be for sale there. It's a diagnostic tool, and it's an incredible opportunity to see these machines at work. The website for the conference is www.galacticwisdomconference.com. The cost for the three-day event is just $197. With discounts and for students and low-income people. Canadian dollars are also accepted at par with the U.S. dollar, and if you'd like to register, please visit the website or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the Seattle area at area code 509-750-9793. I'm also looking for a couple of people who'd like to volunteer to help me with the conference, who'd like to market the event. If you'd like to help, I'd love to give you a free psychic reading and free admission to the conference. And if you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me directly at 509-750-9793. And with that, I'd like to introduce Barbara Hancloud to my listeners. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Ted.
Oh, it's so good to have you on today.
Oh, it's a treat.
Well, you're on Bowen Island up in, is that close to Vancouver? Or is that?
Yes, it's fairly close to Vancouver, which is nice.
Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, you're so fortunate to live in such a beautiful place. I'd like to read this short introduction for you from my many listeners around the world. You're an incredibly interesting woman who's been in contact with advanced benevolent humans from the Pleiadian constellation, and you've written a number of books and articles about their messages for our beautiful, bright future. You're right that now we are now experiencing a transfiguration of our species, which started in 2011 and is continuing as I speak. She writes that our hearts and minds are being flooded with advanced spiritual knowledge as our solar system moves into the photoband, a realm of pure Pleiadian light. She writes that many of you feel over-energized, ungrounded, and disoriented. because of this cosmic convergence. But you also write that we're in the midst of an evolutionary critical leap that will inspire us to heal our bodies, transmute our emotional blocks, and clarify our minds and commune with our souls. Your website is www.hanclow2012.com. And I want to welcome you to the program.
Well, hi, Ted. And I wrote that back in 1995.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, well, you just read that from the Pleiadian agenda, I think. Didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and the Pleiadian agenda came in 94, 95. And that was my most intense contact with the Pleiadian.
Oh, my.
Just in terms of intensity.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Then I wrote a follow-up book about the Pleiadian agenda called Alchemy of Nine Dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pleiadian agenda is totally channeled. And mm-hmm. when the information came in, I didn't change a word.
Wow.
Because I didn't understand what I was getting. That's the main reason I didn't change it.
Oh, wow.
And then I spent 10 years doing a I taught the material for 10 years and did a scientific analysis of what they were saying, because the material was quite scientific,
mm-hmm.
And very multidimensional. And so that's kind of I've actually written a lot of books in a lot of different areas, and that's that one area of my work.
That's incredible. So that's 1995. My goodness, that was 21 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, in fact, that material came in, and it just came in all at once as
wow.
one huge spherical hologram. And it came in right when Edward Witten was composing the calculations for string theory.
Oh, wow.
And what's interesting about the Pleiadian agenda is it's basically a Pleiadian channeling about string theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find one of the most interesting things about receiving that material is that string theory came in at the same time.
Oh, that's
amazing.
And
I can assure you, back in 1995, I didn't understand anything about string theory. Nothing.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I just realized, too, 21 years, of course, divided by 3 is 3 7-year cycles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much to talk about. And I've been told, too, and I'd love your opinion on this, too, Barbara, about this year and next year are critical points in human history, turning points, if you will, for a far better and much brighter future than we've had in a long time.
Yes, this is true. And the reason, there are actually cyclical reasons for this. One of
mm-hmm.
them, of course, is that we're going into the age of Aquarius, and most
mm-hmm.
everybody's familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, most of us know that the Mayan calendars ended, and the Mayan calendars were a kind of a portrayal of kind of an evolutionary cycle in the universe. And we could talk about that, because some of that's in the ruby, quite a bit of that material
mm-hmm.
is in the ruby crystal, because the characters are discussing it. And
mm-hmm.
so what we have to do is kind of go back to 2011, 2012, because there's two key Mayan calendars. One of them is the 2012 date, which is what most people focused on.
Right.
Then the other one is the 2011 date, which is connected with the research of Dr. Carl Johan Kalaman.
Mm-hmm.
And that calendar and Kalaman's research, I think, is the part of it that gives us the greatest insight. So mm-hmm. I kind of favor that one, only because I get more information out of it.
Hmm.
But then what happened is, okay, there you are, the calendars had ended,
mm-hmm.
and we're moving into Aquarius, and
mm-hmm.
then the next thing that happened is we had 7 squares between the planets Uranus and Pluto
mm-hmm.
from 2012 through 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've gone through those squares. The two planets are still fairly close in a square in the sky
mm-hmm.
for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened in 2012, 2015 was something very, very profound,
mm-hmm.
which is all of the things that need to change and end and go away all
mm-hmm.
got catalyzed between 2012 and 2015. And
wow.
the reason for that is the larger cycle of Uranus-Pluto involves Pluto and Uranus coming together in the sky,
mm-hmm.
which they did in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the 1960s, the two planets came together, and that's when all the primary issues that we're working on now first started, like
oh.
ecological movements and feminism and
mm-hmm.
equal rights for blacks and freedom on the planet.
Right.
I think most of us are very familiar with the issues of the 1960s. But
sure.
what happened from 2012 to 2015 is all of those issues came to a critical nexus point. And what happened at that point was we became very much aware of all the things that have to go away. because when you go into the next cycle here, into the age of Aquarius, and as we go into a more fine-tuned energy, all that stuff that has to go away is just hitting us in the face day after day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And the only good thing I can say about Donald Trump is that he's really good at hitting people in the face, even though I don't find what he talks about of very much interest.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of a good example of how we're just all getting hit day after day after day, solving one more problem, one more problem, one more crisis, you know?
Right.
It's very intense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is a very intense time. It's an interesting time to be alive, and I have to remind myself, Barbara, that we all chose to be here at this particular time. We all chose to be here at this particular time.
Oh, yeah, we chose to be here. I've never had any doubt about that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I love being here at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you being a working in radio and teaching, and in my case, writing books and all that,
mm-hmm.
we do take the brunt of a lot of energy that's changing because we've taken the responsibility for helping to change things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, one of the things, this is incredible. I didn't realize you had written this this piece back in 1995, which is just amazing because it.
You mean the Alchemy of Nine Dimensions?
Alchemy of Nine Dimensions.
Yeah. What happened was, here's what happened. I usually teach with my husband Jerry, and so once the Pleiadian agenda came out, and it was a bestseller back at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then we just went all over the world and all over the United States and Canada teaching the material.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were teaching it, we gradually started to understand it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We just took it at face value and trusted it, which is usually what I do with good Pleiadian information.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we discovered is that most of the material in the Pleiadian agenda contradicted science back in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that bothered me because I really like to. I don't usually write. That's the only channel book I've ever written. I really like to check my facts and see what I really think about something.
Sure.
But then what happened from 1995 to like 2003 is piece by piece, the scientific information that they had given for each dimension was then proven by conventional science.
Fascinating.
And so what I did was I kept track of all that. I had a whole file box just for the proofs, a proof of the Pleiadian agenda series.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in 2004, I wrote Alchemy of Nine Dimensions in order to present the proof of all of the things that the Pleiadians said.
Wow.
And then if people get interested in that material, you should get the 2010 edition because the information kept coming in and rolling in. And finally, the proof for string theory came in pretty solid.
Wow.
And so then I had to take the 2004 edition and write a new edition of it. So it's finished at this point, but it's good to get the more recent edition of that.
Now, one interesting thing I wanted to, for my listeners out there around the world who don't know what string theory is, that postulates, Barbara, that we are all connected, not only individually by very, very tiny strings, but also this planet is also connected to other planets, this solar system connected to other solar system, this galaxy with other galaxies, and this universe with other universes. So we're all one. Is that
Everything's all interconnected, and it's interconnected, as you just mentioned a moment ago, very, very wisely.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, atoms aren't the smallest particle in the universe. Vibrating strings are.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens with the vibrating strings is they are in response, like a violin concert, to everything that's going on in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and we can't get too complicated with this, but then it becomes a nine-dimensional system that connects everything at different layers of consciousness. And so what the Pleiadians did with the material was what they were the most interested in is they keep telling me that what's happening on Earth is very important in the whole cosmos. In other words, what's going on here right now is important for the whole universe.
Wow.
And so what they did with the Pleiadian agenda was they showed us all the things that human beings have created over the last 100,000 years in order to access this finer level of consciousness.
Hmm.
And so the book gets into megalithic stuff. It gets into how music affects consciousness. It gets into how really divine thought and divine consciousness affects us. Because we really are in the middle of this amazing symphony, and we're gradually waking up and we're starting to hear the notes.
You know, I can't wait to go into the future 10, 20 years where I think it's going to. Now, one of the things that Nostradamus has said is that eventually there'll be a time when telepathy will be a normal way for people to communicate on this planet.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, I know.
You know, if you've got, let's say you have a criminal trial in a court case, for example, and the judge or jury could just look at the defendant, or the defendant could look at the judge and say, hey, I'm innocent. And they'll say, yes, he is innocent. They'll just read their minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that day when it's complete transparency.
Well, I'm sure that you're somewhat telepathic, because I certainly am.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a cell phone. I don't have an iPad. I don't have any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my case, I'm never going to get those things because I can do that without those machines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to lose that ability by starting to connect myself up too much by means of machines. And so when I think of us becoming completely telepathic, mm-hmm. I see an end point to people just sitting around all day looking at screens and pressing buttons with their fingers.
That'll be amazing. You know, the cell phone industry could go out of business.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to start looking around themselves and seeing nature again.
Right.
People are abandoning nature right now, and that won't work.
No. I can see that happening, too. I actually am a psychic, and I've been in touch with the other side for 22 years. And one of the greatest gifts that's happened to me during the past year and a half, 2 years, is that I have been in touch with Michel de Nostradamus on the other side. And I've talked to him about what he sees for the future. He said that we were on a very destructive path up until about 5 years ago, well, 5 or 10 years ago, and then the path has changed. And now the path is a path that without a World War III, without an Armageddon. He's not saying it's going to be easy, but our future is far brighter than it was several years ago.
Yeah. Well, and I'm older than you are, I'm sure, because I'm 73.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go back. I've been teaching since the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And the improvement in human consciousness mm-hmm. is just astronomical.
Mm.
But at the same time, at the sort of herd level, mm-hmm. it looks like things aren't functioning very well. But
right.
But that's how breakthrough points happen in evolution. What mm-hmm. happens is there's a small core group of the species that moves forward, and then people start to move forward with them eventually.
Right.
So that's where we are. And
mm-hmm.
That's why I'm out there doing everything that I can do, because I think this is such a critical moment.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so happy for the work that you do, Barbara. What kinds of things do you have planned for the future where people perhaps could hear you speak or come to one of your seminars or lectures?
Well, what I've done is I post all the stuff on my website, and I'm not teaching a lot. I do get out there and teach. I
mm-hmm.
do radio interviews as much as possible because it makes it easier.
Right.
And the reason I'm not out there an awful lot is because I'm in the middle of writing a trilogy. And Ruby Crystal, the book that you've just finished reading, is
right.
the first book in that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of Ruby Crystal, the timeline within this trilogy, is 2011 through 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of this book, is to track the transition. Because if it is true that we are in the middle of the major transition point into Aquarius and out of Piscean energy,
mm-hmm.
then tracking that, you could probably hear people pounding. I had a broken sewer line. And
oh, that's fine.
If you're already pounding, just ignore it. It's a broken sewer line. Why worry about that?
I'm going to ask all my listeners around the world to send love and light to your broken sewer line.
It'll be fine. We need a little bit of Pluto here.
All right.
But at any rate, so in order to write this trilogy, in other words, I've switched to fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written 12 or 13, 14 nonfiction books up
mm-hmm.
to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unusual thing for somebody to switch from nonfiction to fiction.
Right.
But the reason I've switched to fiction is that it enables me to have a group of characters, and each one of them has a different level of information and a different level of consciousness. Like one character named Sarah is very mystical and very in tune with early Christianity and the whole Mary Magdalene issue. And another one is a Jewish guy who's a reporter for the New York Times who's working in the Middle East, and another different characters. And each one of them has a different emotional set, an emotional pattern, obviously. And then they also have these amazing data banks, like there's one woman, an Italian woman, who's a specialist on Carl Kalanon.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've decided to do, and of course I've already finished it in Ruby Crystal, and you're going to have to tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
But I tried to get a deeper level of profundity mm-hmm. by having those characters dialogue with each other, because I find when the real beautiful thought comes out is when people are actually dialoguing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the reason I switched to fiction. It gives me a chance to have a much more subtle, multidimensional perspective than I can do in nonfiction.
I agree with you. I mean, the way that you're a wonderful writer, I really enjoyed it, and the way you've written it is a dialogue between different people, and the issues that come out, and you write it from first person. Also, you also write it from the subconscious level too, of people discussing these incredibly interesting issues. There's a lot of really wonderful messages here in the book. You talk about a time hologram. That things are changing, that the truth is coming out, even with Sarah's father, who complained about, for example, the abuse in the Catholic Church. And then there's a section, of course, in the book about his own abuse he had as a boy. But
what you're bringing up there is there's two. Another thing I did with this trilogy is
right.
There's two generations.
Uh-huh.
And the older generation is pretty much the boomer age generation.
Right.
And then the next generation down from that.
Right.
And the reason that I did that is that when you see everything that's going on in our current world,
right.
through the eyes of two generations, you get a much, much more marvelous view of what's happening.
Hmm.
You know, I'm just trying to capture this almost like a film in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other issue for me is that I really like to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
And fiction is entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you find that it was a page?
Very interesting. Going through Sarah's mind about meeting these different men and what she's thinking, and whether she should follow her father's advice and trying to make the right decision. It's fascinating, really. But you know, it also has a message for current society too, because there's a big boomer generation. I'm part of that. I'm 61, and I'm part of that boomer generation. Of course, and there's a younger generation, too.
Yeah, you're a younger boomer, and I'm an older boomer.
That's right.
Actually right in the middle of the whole heyday at Haight-Ashbury and everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was really in the 60s, so I was really out there.
Well, I went to school at Berkeley, too, but it was a little bit after.
Oh, okay. We were probably there at the same time then.
Yeah. But by the time I'd gotten there, they weren't using tear gas anymore. It was the mid-70s.
Things changed in the 70s. But what they did, of course, everybody thought that the hippies went away and new consciousness went away.
Right.
But what happened, at least with me and with almost everybody I know, is we turned around and went into healing. In other words, during the 60s, we kind of had a campaign, and we kind of fought for certain issues. And then what happened is we quieted down and went into healing. And it was very funny, because then the media and the global elite thought we disappeared. They thought we were all living out in suburbs with a couple of dogs and some kids, you know.
Right.
When in reality, most of us were just at that point training as healers, because we realized that you have to heal the issue. The argument isn't the point. The healing is what really counts.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to ask, with this Aquarian age that's coming into effect now, what do your friends in the Pleiadians think about, like, what would life be like in 30 years, for example? Drastically.
Okay, what was that? I couldn't hear it. So
what will life be like for us here on the planet in 20 to 30 years?
I think we can already see it to some extent, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
For example, information technology is a big part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the real first Aquarian wave was the quantum, the discovery of the quantum 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens with the change of ages, they occur over a period of 200 or 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because the old age needs to, some of the parts of it need to go away,
mm-hmm.
and other parts of it need to transform into something different.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the issue of the age of Pisces was the development of organized religion.
Mm.
And then the age before the age of Pisces is the age of Aries, which is about 2000 BC,
mm-hmm.
up to about 0 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the issues we're dealing with right now, which is very difficult, is that the age of Aries was the age of organized warfare.
Oh, okay.
And people on the earth have always hit each other over the head and grabbed a woman or grabbed somebody's lunch. It's always gone on.
Right.
But the organized warfare is when a culture and a society devotes its resources and power to warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had 2,000 years of intense organized warfare, and then unfortunately that went right into the age of Pisces and it became wars for God.
Mm.
And so now we've had 2,000 years of warfare dedicated to killing people in the name of God.
Right.
And we have a huge clearance that's required at this point.
Right.
For example, for the first time in my career, and in my case, I used to be in SDS. I was one of the early people in Ann Arbor in SDS.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always been an anti-war activist, and I've always been a pacifist. And so there's nothing new about that. But I'm, for the first time in my career, calling for the complete disarmament coming from the United States. And that means emptying the bases. That means bringing everybody home. That means getting ready for the equipment and the weapons and stuff.
I know
it sounds like a really radical idea, but what's happening with mm-hmm. the Earth is the Earth can't tolerate the warfare anymore.
I couldn't agree with you more, Barbara.
Yeah, it can't tolerate it, and it's gonna quake, and it's gonna burn. And it's going to flood because the planet can't take it anymore. And this is typical, you know, of what happens when an age comes to an end.
Sure,
The age of Aries and the age of Pisces.
But as
you know, it's very mm-hmm. difficult to mm-hmm. live through that process of letting things go.
Oh, sure.
Where we are now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I read on the Internet last week that the United States has 176 bases in over 130 countries. And when I read that, Barbara, I said to myself, why? There used to be a wonderful man named Dr. Stanley Monteith. He actually was on my show back in, I believe it was March or April of 2014. He had his own Radio Liberty Network. He was a wonderful man. He passed away a couple of years ago, but I used to listen to him all the time. And he used to talk about this very issue. He kept asking, why are American troops in all these countries around the world when a lot of places were not even welcome? It doesn't make any sense. People don't want us there.
They really resent the presence of the United States. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the United States is going to have to take the lead on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we took the lead.
Right.
We're going to have to take the lead in the transformation, you know.
Right. And that includes the American public asking hard questions. And you always, you know, I always like to think, you know, all that money being spent in the military here in the United States, if we pulled that back, just think of the kind of society we could create. Free education and actually free health care. I personally think Obamacare is worthless, but free health care, could be free educational system. You could even cut back on taxes, too, and give people more of the money back to create a better society.
Yeah. So back to the, if we go back to the Ruby Crystal for a minute, and then I'll lead back into this anti-war issue.
Okay.
The background material in the Ruby Crystal is priestly sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And the deep topic in the book is the whole issue of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church.
Right.
And then a deep examination through the characters of how that functions and what it's creating in the world and why it's there. Just all the issues come up.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the sequel is really going deeply into the issue of ending war.
Hmm.
So that each one of these books is going to have a kind of a background level of information
mm-hmm.
as we go through these transitions, because this revelation in the early 2000s, late 1990s, of what was going on in the Catholic Church and the number of people who were being abused is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I don't think, have paid enough attention to it at all. And it hasn't gone away, by the way. It's still going on.
Right, right.
You know.
Right. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And here in this country, you know, much of the media is controlled by six corporations, which control about 90-95% of what most Americans hear in this country.
That's right.
And they don't question any of this military spending. They never do. And that's, and I think it's they're part of the problem. They're part of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah. Well, the United States economy basically functions on the sale of armaments.
Right.
And so all the corporations, one way or another, it's almost impossible to invest in the United States, just because no matter what, all the companies are also involved in producing material for war.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very difficult to invest.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. Sure. What's it like in Canada as far as the economy goes?
It's better up here because, number one, we're a smaller country.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, we also we didn't have a revolution up here against, you know, going that went on up here against the Brits. We're still connected to the British Empire, which of course creates what it creates.
Right.
But we haven't had a painful revolution and also a painful civil war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got our issues, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the United States has some pretty dark shadows, especially the Civil War, which are not, they're not processed and they're not healed, and people don't come to terms with it because of the way the culture controls information.
Hmm. Interesting.
So it's easier to be a Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, for some reason, in this lifetime, I've tended in this lifetime to be a very peaceful person. I'm a wife and a mother of four children, and I don't do well with stress. And so that's one of the reasons we're living up in Canada, is basically when George Bush got in the second time in 2004,
right,
and then invaded Iraq,
right,
he didn't even get elected, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
for some reason, it was over the top for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in my case, my family on all sides have been in America since the 1600s.
Wow.
They came over, their early people came over, and then also I'm part Native American. So it was a challenge to leave. But I just finally couldn't stand it anymore. I don't want to be angry in this lifetime.
Sure.
I have a stated goal of being peaceful and happy.
Well, those are very admirable things to be, believe me.
No, I just don't want to do that. I mean, every lifetime, you know, has a theme and has a quality.
Right.
And in this lifetime, I don't want that. So I'm not doing it.
Right. Well, you live in a beautiful place. I love Canada. It's such a beautiful country, and I'm so glad that you're on today. I want to get back to. It was amazing. I remember I'm reading what the statement that you sent me on what George Bush did. He actually created ISIS when he invaded Iraq in 2013 and overthrew Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard.
They're pounding out there against me. I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay, Barbara?
Pardon?
Can you hear me now all right?
Yeah. Just make sure. I just couldn't hear your last sentence.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
You wrote that George Bush, President Bush, created ISIS when he invaded Iraq in 2013 and threw out Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard.
That's right.
And since that time, when we listen to the major media here in the United States, they talk about this so-called threat of ISIS. But there's been a lot of documents coming out that our government, the federal government here in the U.S., is actually funding ISIS. So it's like they want this perpetual war.
And I think that you're bringing up a good point, because fortunately at this point, a lot of people realize that the United States created ISIS by invading Iraq. Because what happened was the Americans abrogated their own principles and tortured people in the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. And what happened there was they tortured a lot of the people who were part of Saddam Hussein's Royal Guard. And so what happened there is they created this nexus of hatred and bitterness. And it's coming back to haunt us now.
Sure. What goes around comes around.
That's right. Yeah, and in terms of funding them, I haven't actually heard that one, but certainly they funded them by leaving all the weapons all over Iraq and then leaving.
Yeah,
and then ISIS captured all the weapons. That's the main reason that ISIS became so powerful back in, 2013.
Right. Well, I personally, I'd love to get your opinion on this too, Barbara. I don't see a third world war. I just don't see it happening. And I don't see it happening because the consciousness of a planet is raising, and people don't want war. I mean, sure, this administration here in this country may do their best to try to instigate a war in the Middle East through ISIS and funding and paying for their weapons and training, but I don't think it's going to work.
And I think that the refugee crisis is going to be the key to things this year. Because as the West wakes up and realizes that all of the people that they're bombing are going to stream out of there and end up all over Europe and all over the world, they got a problem with that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, I think
so. That's going to probably be one of the main things that's going to, because the question is, what's it going to take to turn the corner? And I see in the refugee crisis more potential to change this than in anything I've seen so far.
Well, I feel sorry for these people. They've been bombed out of their homes.
Oh.
and they've left, and the logical place for them to go for many is Europe. And then, but when they come, they've overloaded the facilities there, from what I know. And they but you know, if there wasn't the war and the conflict with ISIS in the first place, they would have never streamed out of that area.
That's right. And then there's another issue lurking behind this, which is the background in the second book in my trilogy, mm-hmm. which is that when you get into the Middle Eastern cultures, there's a mixture of Christianity and Muslim and Judaism,
mm-hmm.
and there's this whole rich fabric of multi-religions in the Middle East, mm-hmm. that has been shattered by Western intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to the First World War with the Ottoman Empire and different phases of history.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is that the basis of people's cultures, their religions, have just been shattered, mm-hmm. and are being shattered more so at mm-hmm. the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another way that you see the end of the Age of Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
To see all of these religions are the development of the Age of Pisces,
mm-hmm.
the major religions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are going on that we don't even comprehend yet in terms of what will actually happen to religion. I mean, religion will never go away.
Sure,
and
sure.
People need faith and they need something to believe in. But the issue of wars for God is, mm-hmm. is really what's on the table now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that the Supreme Being would want us to kill ourselves anyway. I mean, the whole idea of a war for God is an oxymoron. It doesn't make sense.
Of course.
It's a total oxymoron. But one thing I wanted to bring up quickly, we've got about 19 minutes left, and this is a fascinating piece that you wrote in your article called A Time-Free, Transparent World that was presented at the Mind, Body, Soul Expo here.
Yeah, and that's on my website, too.
Wonderful.
Yeah, 2012.com, if anybody wants to get that.
Okay.
A Time-Free, Transparent World.
Wonderful. Yeah. That was on April 16, 2016, a few weeks ago. You wrote that when you were a young girl, your Cherokee Celtic grandfather repeatedly told you the story of our traumatic cultural regression that was caused by a series of cosmic cataclysms about 12,000 years ago. Of course, that was the end of Atlantis. And then you wrote that he told you how Earth's indigenous people struggled to recover their ancient heritage over thousands of years. I would love if you could share a little bit about that time.
Mm-hmm.
That must have left a tremendous mark on human history.
Okay. I took what I did with that material, because my grandfather trained me from age 3 to age 17 in
uh-huh.
the Cherokee record tradition,
uh-huh.
which is the story of the ages.
Mm-hmm.
And so that material is in a book called Catastrophobia.
Oh, okay.
Which came out in 2001.
Uh-huh.
And then that was rewritten and significantly updated in 2011 the publisher changed the title to Awakening the Planetary Mind.
Uh-huh.
And that was actually pretty funny, because when I had Catastrophobia, which means a fear of catastrophe,
uh-huh.
The publisher didn't want me to have that be the title.
Hmm.
But I just insisted on it. So now what has happened is the term catastrophobia is now being used by all kinds of major people like Graham Hancock and Collins and all that. So
uh-huh.
just when the word became part of culture, then mm-hmm. the publisher changed the title
hmm.
to Awakening the Planetary Mind.
Huh.
And what goes on in Awakening the Planetary Mind is basically a study of 20,000 years of human consciousness.
Wow.
And it goes back to the point before the cataclysms. The cataclysms occurred around 12,000, 13,000 years ago,
right.
up until about 11,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in other words, they went over a period of, about 1,800 years. And what happened to us was that we were a very advanced, a species with very advanced consciousness
right.
before that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened is basically we turned into beings who fear nature and fear living on the earth.
Hmm.
And so Catastrophobia catalogs the early period when we were still more enlightened,
mm-hmm.
and then goes through the cataclysms, and then especially it covers the period after the cataclysm,
hmm.
like 8,000, 7,000, 6,000 BC, when cultures began to develop.
Wow.
Because when human cultures developed on this planet after the cataclysms, they were being developed by a multi-traumatized species.
Wow, fascinating.
And we are a multi-traumatized species. This
mm-hmm.
is the reason that we see the kind of behavior that we see at this time. And what were the big shifts at this point, even bigger than the age of Aquarius, is that we are waking up and healing from our trauma. And we're waking up and realizing what happened to us, and we're healing it.
Wow.
And so we're in the middle of a massive, massive global healing crisis right now. And that's the theme of awakening the planetary mind.
Incredible. That's just so amazing. I know I've been told I'm from the Pleiades, and I've been here for a long time, 52,000 years. And I know I was a priest during the Atlantean time, approximately 12,500 years ago. And at that time, I tried to turn things around from a crazy military elitist cabal who were playing with weapons they shouldn't have been playing with. They ended up destroying the civilization. Barbara, I think many of those same entities are back again, and some of them are making the same mistakes that they used to. But this time, I think we're going to turn it around. We will succeed in creating a much better planet without war.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And so because I was given such a wonderful legacy, I think in some ways that's a very important book. Fortunately, other writers have also taken up this theme. So if you go back 15 years ago, people still thought that everything was kind of slow on this planet and kind of uniformitarianism, slow change.
Right.
And then people have gradually woken up to the fact this is a lively place. And we have periodic cataclysms and periodic extinctions.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but we need to become more conscious of who we really are as a species.
And it's so important. And that book, I'm going to have to get a copy and read it, because I'd love to read about the history in the past.
Yeah.
Well, what do you? I'm just curious. Now, there's the first trilogy of the book. There's three books. Then it would be your book called Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. The second book's going to be on war, and then the third book, that'll be, what will the third book be again?
I don't know. I have a feeling that it'll probably have a background of enlightenment, but I'm not sure. I'm deep into the second one right now, and I've only realized, like in the last month, that how much of a deep theme that in the ending of war was going to be in the second book. So I'm kind of experiencing that right now. So one of the characters, the New York Times review, read the first one, Simon Appel, the guy from the New York Times who does the article on priestly sexual abuse.
Sure.
Well, because of his background, he is now in the sequel. He's in the Middle East dealing with the sexual slavery system developed by ISIS.
Oh.
So Simon is kind of a kingpin here having somebody who's like right in the middle of the crisis. And then that brings in his parents, as you can imagine, because you can imagine how his parents feel about him being over there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of, and these characters, by the way, Ted, this all came to me one day in 2011. So the way this book came through was all the characters came through, and they gave me their ages and their background, their psychological profile. And then what happened is I just sat down with them day after day in the morning and just let them do their thing. So I haven't plotted. The first book was not plotted, and the second one isn't being plotted. It's just unfolding.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really a fun way to write.
Wonderful. Yeah. Barbara, we've got about 10 minutes left of the hour, and boy, this has gone fast. And I always like to ask wonderful guests like yourself who have very positive work to uplift humanity and raise consciousness on this planet. What kinds of things, if someone were to contact you or meet you on the street and said, I'm familiar with your work, what kinds of things can they do to make this planet a better place? What would you tell them?
Well, I'm actually a really basic person, even though I'm obviously very intellectual. And I go right back, first of all, to family and kindness and depth right within the family. And so I think that we're living in an age where people don't tend to value family highly enough. And I think we're missing out on a lot with that. And so I was very close to my parents, and now I'm very close to my children. And I start first with family. And then, of course, you and I were boomers.
Right.
And one of the roles of the boomers was to create emotional healing for their own children. And the reason for that is that our parents, in other words, these are people who now would be 80 and 90, 100 years old, the generation before us was still coming out of the Victorian age.
Right.
And they were fairly cold emotionally, and they were fairly distant. And the boomer children didn't have a very close relationship with their parents on the whole.
Right.
And so we suffered from that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Second World War didn't help us either.
Right.
And so then we suffered so much from emotional detachment, I think, mm-hmm. that we turned around and realized that we had to be attached to our children.
Right.
And so I think one of the key roles of our generation it has been that.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the whole issue of a family for me is just central.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess another central issue for me would be the whole issue of how do you really heal yourself? How do you, and when I say heal yourself, how do you keep healthy?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have all kinds of big issues about allopathic medicine versus alternative techniques and all that, but we could spend hours on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that's a central theme at this point, to realize that we are naturally healthy,
mm-hmm.
and But you're only going to be healthy if you think you're healthy.
That's true.
And so if you're going around testing yourself all the time, wondering if you're healthy or not,
mm-hmm.
you're going to constantly be worried about being unhealthy. And I think that's the main reason everybody's so sick.
Well, I have to tell you, I had a gentleman named, I believe it was named Zora. He was he's one of the high priestesses of Telos in the inner earth. He was on my show about 3 weeks ago, Barbara's fascinating gentleman. And he said that we are all gods and goddesses on this planet, and we have the ability to heal ourselves just through
yep.
the power of our thought. And
yep.
that really resonated really well with me. He did an experiment on the air. I've had tinnitus with me. I've had tinnitus in my ears since a car accident I had in 1978. And we went on air, and he taught me this saying to say on the air. And it was, I believe he said, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Receive the power of the Supreme Being into you to heal your ears or to heal your heart or whatever you needed help with. And after I did that, I still have the ringing, but it went down substantially in terms
Great.
Of volume, which was really really an amazing thing. So I think we all have the ability within ourselves to heal ourselves.
And this is, by the way, coming to a critical point at
mm-hmm.
this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I'm a few years older than you are, and just people around me are mm-hmm. just dropping off like flies right now,
mm.
mostly from medical treatment.
Mm.
I watch them one after another.
Sure.
You know, in the last 5 years in particular, it's almost like it's so predictable. Okay,
wow.
Now they're going to have. Okay, now you need a colonoscopy, right? And
right.
then once you get the colonoscopy, you need whatever. And
right.
I'm just watching people get sick, and we're not getting sick, and friends of ours who work with these techniques are not getting sick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's a real campaign right now, I'm afraid, with allopathic medicine to make people sick. And I think it's something that people have to become conscious of.
Well, I have to tell you that some of the best friends I have in the entire world are with the Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan. And they will actually, two other people will be coming to my conference on June 10, 11, 12. They'll be coming to Olympia, Washington, here in the United States, and they'll be bringing with them what they call Hado machines. Now, Hado is a Japanese word for vibration, and what the machine does, you put your hand on this device, and I've done it myself before, and it'll read whatever, if you have any spiritual or physical problems, it'll go into that and then recommend, it's a diagnostic tool, recommend that it'll help you increase your vibration to the right levels to rectify, to help heal or cure any physical or spiritual condition.
Well,
and
so you're bringing up a good point, because another thing that's going on right now mm-hmm. is that there are all kinds of incredible teachings like this. There are all kinds of incredible people who
mm-hmm.
have techniques like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you avoid allopathic medicine,
mm-hmm.
and if you only go, like in my case, I have a homeopath,
uh-huh.
and I have a reflexologist,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have, it's not like I don't have help.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely do not use any Western medicine
mm-hmm.
because I think it's very dangerous right now.
Oh, yeah,
so,
I agree.
So even though it's dangerous, on the other hand, the things that are being created in different technologies that are
mm-hmm.
being created are really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that stuff 10, 20 years ago the way we do now.
Oh,
you know?
Sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I had Randy Kramer on my radio show about 2 months ago. And Randy had spent 20 years in the secret American space program, 17 of which of those years were spent on Mars and on the moon, but mostly on Mars. And he said on the air something very interesting, Barbara. I asked him, well, what if one of the people up on the moon or Mars gets sick? And let's say they get cancer. Can they cure it? He says, yes, they do. They go into what's called a vibrational bed.
Yeah.
Up on the moon, they have facilities there that aren't available to the people of this planet, but they're available in the secret space program. And they have someone lay down, Barbara, and they adjust the vibration to the correct vibration so their cancer goes away.
Yeah.
It's the same theory used in these Hado machines.
Yeah, but see, some of that stuff, like, for example, there's biomass, there's Vibratron machines, there's actually, this stuff is actually becoming available at this point.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I think that the trick for anybody who's concerned about their health or anything like that is to realize you start taking the drugs, you start taking the treatments, they're going to make you sick.
Right, that's true.
You know, just pure and simple. You've got to find an alternative way at this point.
Mm-hmm. And
that was the second issue that's really important to me. And then... Mm-hmm. My third issue is I'm a grandmother now. I have a little granddaughter.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Beautiful.
Of course, I love her.
Beautiful.
And then I just continue to write.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to write as long as I'm on this planet.
Good.
That's for sure.
Good. Well, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I'm so happy you could come on today. We've got a couple of minutes left, and you're welcome to talk about anything you like.
Okay, what'd you say?
Oh, we've got a couple minutes left, Barbara, and you're welcome to talk about anything you like.
Okay.
It's your final comments.
That's what I want to talk about. Ask me a question.
Oh, ask you a question.
Or ask me a question about the ruby crystal.
Oh.
Is there anything in there where you had a question?
Well, actually, yeah. On page, let me look at this real quick. You mentioned several things that I guess you could call the cabal or the dark forces would like to have here on the Earth. A nuclear page 319, a nuclear meltdown that destroys the oceans, complete melt of the North and South Poles, a total war between Christianity and Islam, all kinds of things, including weather control and I don't see any of this happening. I think there are dark forces here on the planet who'd like to see that, but I don't see it myself.
Well, the ruby crystal is really trying to explore all the way through the whole trilogy that whole question of what is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it mainly does is it has one character who's very troubled and has a big struggle with darkness, mm-hmm. Armando Pierleone, mm-hmm. an Italian man.
Sure.
And so
sure.
What I'm doing with it is I'm exploring that's a real question: is evil real? Or is evil something that we just are creating because we're a multi-traumatized species? That's pretty much what I think.
Interesting.
I think that what happened is that we became so fearful 12,000 years ago that evil energy had a toehold and was able to get into the planet.
Oh, that's fascinating. I hadn't thought of it that way.
But even more significantly than that, the book also explores the actual structures of the planet. And according to Carl Johan Kalaman, there's a midline that goes through the 12 degrees east longitude point, which goes through Gabon and then through Tunisia and through Rome and up through Berlin and up into Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. And there's a real issue as to the actual way that our planet actually responds to dark and light forces.
Wow.
Or dark and light energy, the yin and the yang. It's not like it isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really, really trying to explore those kinds of questions in this trilogy.
Fascinating. And fascinating.
Going for the deep stuff.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Barbara, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. Your website again is www.handclow2012. And I'd love to meet you sometime too, perhaps when I'm up in Canada or you're down here.
I'm up in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good, good.
But I really, really appreciate the support. I used to live in Seattle, so I know where Bellevue is.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, right.
All right. All right.
I lived in the Capitol Hill neighborhood, and the Catholics were moving out of Capitol Hill and going over to a new church in Bellevue.
Oh, okay.
Back in those days. That's my memory.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I'd like to, I have a recording of a Pleiadian spacecraft taking off from the Semajay, Billy Myers, a place in outside of Zurich in Switzerland. It's an old recording, but I thought it'd be fun to play it here at the end as a way of saying thanks to you and your Pleiadian friends for all the wonderful messages that you've given us today.